What is going on, crypto family? This dog is super needy. As you'll see in the interview, she makes her way up on the table. She had to make sure she was in the shot. And as soon as I got up here, she started jumping up and wanted to be in my lap again. Huh, my little buddy. Yep. Say hi. How's everybody doing? Anyways, today I bring you Nate, the founder of CryptoSlate. We talked about all kinds of things, problems with the press, the media, the Istanbul Blockchain Week that's coming up, a whole bunch of cool stuff. So please help us grow the family. Give us a comment and review on the Apple or Google Play Store. It's super quick and easy. Just scroll down, click the little stars, comment, and just help us grow the fam. Let's go check out Nate, and I'll catch you on the other side. What is going on, crypto family? Today we got our buddy Nate, the CEO and founder of CryptoSlate, with us. Awesome to have you, buddy. What part of the world are you in?
I'm in Seattle, Washington. Thanks for having me.
Awesome, man. Seattle. See, the last time I was there was TF Blockchain Week, right? Hanging out with the one. So, yeah, that was good times, man. Really good.
Yeah, that's when you first met too.
Yeah, for sure. It's a great time. So now you're still in Seattle, but I hear that you're thinking about moving to London. So I guess before we get into that and all the cool stuff that you do there at CryptoSlate, you know, maybe just kind of tell us how you got into crypto, man. How did Nate start his crypto journey?
Sure. So not to bring it too far back, but I started programming when I was 12 years old. So I've been a web developer for a long time, and started my first business when I was 18. So I've always had the kind of entrepreneurial spirit as well. And then in my early 20s, started working with other kind of companies that were interested in setting up kind of media or blogging operations. So I worked with Nike and Yahoo back in 2007 to get blogs going for them. So I've always had kind of the entrepreneurial and media background. And then in 2015, my buddy, who's a hedge fund manager, told me to download this app called Coinbase. So I downloaded Coinbase and saw the price of Bitcoin was $270. Bought a few Bitcoin, and then at that point, I really fell into the rabbit hole. I just discovered that this is a crazy universe. There's so much happening. This was back during a time when one of the early Bitcoin developers, Mike Hearn, actually said Bitcoin was dead at the time. So there was a lot of, you know, doom and gloom back then. But as we know, 2015, 2016 were kind of the steady ramp up to the crazy bull market that we experienced in 2017. And really, you know, I just became interested just, you know, first through investing, but eventually I realized that I wanted to work full time in the space. I was spending all my free time just researching and learning as much as I could. So in August of 2017 was when I kind of dropped everything I was doing and built CryptoSlate with my co-founder, Matthew.
That's awesome, man. It's very, very cool. So when you started hearing about blockchain, what was the most intriguing part of it? Because you come from like the traditional world, right? So you said you were, you know, helping Nike, you know, get blog exposure and stuff like that, right? So how do you go from Nike to blockchain? I mean, what's, you know, how'd you make that transition, that switch?
I think just the idea of having a decentralized technology that would facilitate all these different applications. You know, Bitcoin's obviously the best example of decentralized, you know, payments being something that is kind of gaining widespread adoption. So it really kind of, you know, some of the general talking points that, you know, people say about, you know, the decentralization, the security, the self-sovereign nature of holding your own money. A lot of those things kind of resonated with me. And at that point, I was really intrigued about how can I create a cool user experience for people who want to learn more? Because obviously, you know, despite being a decade into Bitcoin and this technology, we all can agree it's still very, very early on.
Yeah, for sure. So when you were working at Nike, like what was some of the biggest takeaways that you had there? Maybe things that you apply to today at CryptoSlate?
So I wasn't working for Nike. We created blog for Nike. So we built what was Nike's kind of like first, you know, basically way of spreading information in a kind of casual way to their fans. Actually, the Nike Baller Network was one of the first blogs that we designed when we set that up. But as far as, you know, my takeaways for now, it's kind of, I've always been a user experience designer, and I've always kind of had this this need or this interest to create cool user experiences. And at the time in 2017, you know, there was obviously CoinDesk and Cointelegraph, but there weren't too many other kind of big name crypto media or blockchain publications, especially ones that didn't have the data side as well. So the first kind of inclination or idea was to combine the data side with the media side. So kind of combining CoinMarketCap with like Cointelegraph, for example. so that, you know, as someone is reading an article, they could also get all of the real-time pricing information and kind of supplementary information about any particular coin, project, or, you know, person that they're reading about.
Yeah, that's a good transition. So for people that haven't heard of Crypto Slate, you know, obviously I have, you know, I consume your media. It's great. What's some of the big benefits that you guys offer against maybe like a CoinDesk or Cointelegraph or, you know, any of those guys out there?
Yeah. So in addition to publishing daily news articles, we also have a massive directory of companies, products, people, and cryptocurrencies. So while you're actually reading any given article, you'll see in the right-hand sidebar, we display kind of real-time, you know, meta information about the companies, products, people, and cryptocurrencies that they're reading about in an article. So CryptoSlate is kind of a one-stop shop for not just learning about the daily news, but also gathering any other sort of information about the people or the companies or the cryptocurrency market data. So that was kind of the first idea, was how do we combine, you know, these two different sets of data, the news side and also the directory of other information.
No, that's super valuable for sure. What's, you know, kind of on a funnier note, what's some of the craziest stuff that you've seen in crypto so far? Maybe stuff that you did report on or stuff that you didn't report on?
There's been quite a bit of drama over the past few months, it seems like, in the crypto media space. So it's been kind of interesting to watch. We've always tried to be as neutral and objective as possible with kind of the presenting of information. We really try to steer clear of some of the, you know, more controversial stuff. We have done some investigative reporting about, you know, different scams and different you know, things that are happening. For example, there was this EOS exploit that was happening a few months ago, and we were the first to report on what was happening, and then it ended up getting, you know, tweeted and talked about by some of the founders of EOS, like Brendan Bloomer and Dan Larimer. So we're always kind of, you know, we're trying to constantly figure out the right mix between presenting just the raw news and also the investigative side of the journalism.
Yeah, you don't see a lot of that with a lot of these websites. Mostly it's just kind of regurgitation of other people's content, right? You don't see a lot of people with, you know, feet on the ground, and they're out there trying to, you know, lift up the rock and see what's underneath it and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, it's kind of interesting, you know, when you see, we were talking a little bit earlier about, you know, like Leah Quinn, right? And all the stuff that she went through, and she started reporting about, you know, Ethereum and kind of some of the blowback that went on her. Have you seen, you know, some of that as well, you know, with CryptoSlate from the EOS article or anything else in general?
Yeah. So the interesting thing about the crypto community is that, you know, it's a tight knit, relatively small community. And so much of the interactions happen on Twitter. So you're constantly seeing a lot of, you know, personalities fighting and a lot of, you know, people that have varying opinions kind of, you know, using their egos really to kind of argue. And unfortunately, there have been a lot of times where kind of journalists have been attacked just for exposing the fact. A few months ago, a website, which is no longer operating, but Breaker Mag, they did this kind of deep dive into the different crypto media websites that basically were taking money to remove the disclosure or the sponsored tags off their sponsored content, which in the United States is illegal. The Federal Trade Commission says that anytime a website takes money, they have to disclose that for any sort of advertising purposes. So Breaker Mag, which, you know, in a really interesting piece that just got a ton of traffic, basically exposed a lot of other crypto media websites that were engaging in this kind of, you know, behind the scenes pay to play. CryptoSlate was never on the list. We've always been above board with all of our disclosure, all of our, you know, sponsored labeling things as ad or sponsored content. But that was interesting to see that there is still this phenomenon where companies think that they can just pay extra money in order to remove the disclosure. And that's not in the best interest of the readers or the community.
Yeah, no, you got that right. I hear often that most everything that we consume on the major websites and whatnot are mostly pay to play. You know, they're mostly sponsored and they pay the writers kind of directly to actually put that content out there. So I hear it all the time. I don't have any proof of this, but yeah. You hear about the stuff that you're reading out there, most all of it is just basically paid for by the company and somebody else's voice to put there on the platform for people to consume. So obviously, you know, I think you hit a chord there. I think that's definitely something that's out there and prevalent in the industry for sure.
Yeah, and it's fine as long as it's disclosed, as long as the reader understands what they're looking at as an advertisement. But anytime it's you know, there's some question whether what they're reading or not is an advertisement or not, that's really bad for the industry. It kind of slows the growth of the entire industry, because what we don't want to happen is, you know, this kind of lack of information on one side versus the other. If there's a group of people that know that something is paid and another don't, that kind of is the equivalent of like pumping and dumping on the readers, which is, you know, bad for the entire growth of the industry.
No, well said. And another thing we're talking about too is Twitter. It seems like everybody, well, not everybody, but it seems that the large majority of the haters, the people that stir up the most crap, that talk the most crap, they're hiding behind an avatar, some kind of new persona that they created, you know, Billy Bob 36 or something like that, that doesn't exist, you know, with an avatar of maybe Billy Bob Thornton or something like that. And he's just talking all kinds of trash from, you know, the safety of his computer, right? You know, it's interesting to see like all the things that do happen on Twitter. I know recently, Mitchell Moss, one of your guys, one of our buddies who we met up there in Seattle, he kind of got into it with Joe Rhodes of Dragon Chain, right? So what's ever come from that? Have you been following the story at all? Has anything else, you know, I guess transpired since then?
Yeah. So, that was kind of a weird situation in the sense that, you know, Dragon Chain's, they're a local company in Seattle. You know, we've written about Dragon Chain a few times in the past and never in any negative way. Always kind of objectively just covering what they're doing or obviously showing their data and their price charts and stuff like that. But that was an interesting situation. And, one thing I always say about Twitter,
he wasn't hiding behind an avatar, right? This was the CEO of, you know, Dragon Chain, kind of just, you know, going.
Yeah. So. Yeah. That was, you know, it's a funny kind of miscommunication. It's easy for miscommunications to start and kind of manifest themselves on Twitter. You know, even if someone is not behind an avatar, they're using their real name. I think Twitter just provides too easily of an outlet for people to, you know, just voice their opinion without really regard for what the other side, you know, how it may be interpreted or, you know, what the kind of, you know, consequence of that will be. In this particular case, there's this kind of a miscommunication. So I ended up going and meeting with the Dragon Chain guys and, you know, went to their office and met the CEO. It was all, you know, very nice and they were super gracious to me. It was a positive experience. It got resolved well, but it was one of those cases where Twitter, it's just too easy to have these kind of discussions and arguments over Twitter when a lot of times it's better to just hop on the phone with someone and kind of, you know, let things try to diffuse in a more natural, organic way.
Yeah. You know, I hear you. Some people just like, I don't know, they maybe like the media coverage behind it. They like, you know, getting the community behind it. They like just stirring up crap, or maybe they're just unhappy people and this is their way of venting or kicking the dog, so to speak. So, you know. I'm not speaking about Joe. I'm just talking about people on Twitter in general. You'll see that there's different types of people there that are, you know, some people are just there for the community. They're, you know, there to, I don't know, help with adoption, just to support people. They're, you know, they add value. And then you get other people that are just trolls, right? And they got a miserable life and they're just out there just hating on people. And this is the only place that anybody will listen to them. So it's definitely interesting for sure, you know, to see how that stuff all plays out and how it's going to continue to play out. But being from Seattle, you know, you said that you guys are moving to London. So what makes you want to move to London of all places, man? I mean, I hear the food and the weather is horrible. I've been there.
it's pretty similar weather to London, but London right now is actually the number one city in the world for fintech venture capital deals that are happening. So even with Brexit, you know, London being a financial hub and a technology hub, it also, you know, is a financial technology hub. It makes sense. So there's a lot of companies there that have started over the past few years that have achieved kind of multi-billion-dollar valuations, like Monzo is a digital bank, Revolut, which I'm sure you've heard of. They kind of are mixing the new digital bank also with the, you know, crypto exchange side. Bitstamp, one of the larger European crypto exchanges, is there. really cool crypto derivatives data visualization company called Skew, just raised $2 million. We're actually going to be working out of an office called Level 39, which is kind of like WeWork, but with a much better reputation. Level 39 is about 200 companies in the Canary Wharf financial district of London, and about 40% of them are crypto or blockchain. So it's a great ecosystem for people that kind of want to network within the, you know, the blockchain or fintech community. And, you know, London is obviously so close to so many other hotspots in Europe, like Malta, Switzerland. There's really, you know, as you know, being from the US, it's like, this is such a global phenomenon. There's so much happening around the world right now. It's not just the United States, kind of like the past, you know, tech revolution of the 2000s was. It's things are happening in Singapore, you know, things are happening in Africa. I mean, blockchain is really like a worldwide global revolution.
Yeah. And I guess too, also being in London on the other side of the pond, so to speak, you know, it connects you to the rest of the world that is a lot more blockchain friendly, right? Because in the US, yep. still kind of waiting in the water, is trying to figure out what's going to happen exactly. But other parts of the world, they've kind of adopted it. And so I know that our good buddy, you know, Erhan, he's got, I think, Istanbul Blockchain Week right there in Turkey. So that's, you're going to be there, right? So I'm sure I'll see you there.
Yeah, that'll be probably one of the biggest, if not the biggest event of 2020. Turkey right now has one of the highest per capita use cases of cryptocurrency. So I think around 20% of residents in Turkey own cryptocurrency. And it really isn't talked about nearly as much as it should be. Although it's starting to be. Binance recently announced they're going to be opening up an office in Turkey with a dozen or so employees. And Erhan with Istanbul Blockchain Week on April 9th and 10th, 2020, to be one of the biggest events. He's going to be attracting some huge names. Obviously, we'll be there. And hopefully guys like CZ from Binance will be there. But yeah, it should be really one of the standout events to kind of put Turkey on the map, give it the exposure which it deserves for the work that it's doing to really make itself kind of a blockchain hub or a fintech hub.
Yeah, I'm excited for it for sure. It's going to be a great time. And then you were talking about, you called it Level 39? That's...
Yeah. Right. Yeah, so, Level 39. Yeah, that's the office space we'll be working out of in London.
It sounds like you're going to have no problem getting content for CryptoSlate with...
Yeah.
...instead of being blockchain companies.
Yeah, that's definitely one of the benefits is when you have an ecosystem of, 50 companies that are working on the same, a few floors in a skyscraper, the, opportunities for covering different stories or business development opportunities, it'll be massive. Another well-known crypto media operation that's out of London is Decrypt. So Decrypt has been getting, a ton of great coverage this year. It really is a fantastic site with, they do a lot of great work. They work out of the Consensus office in London. So they're someone I'm, sure we'll be grabbing pints with fairly regularly once we're in London too.
Awesome, man. And then as far as like, what's some of the biggest things that you're seeing going on in crypto right now that maybe most people aren't talking about? Because you kind of got your finger on the pulse of things, so to speak. You're in the media business. You get people coming at you from all over the place. What's some of the things out there that you know that maybe other people don't know that you think is kind of a big deal that other people haven't seen yet?
Yeah. So, I think one thing that's interesting is, what's going to happen after the halving, in May 2020. So, a lot of people are saying the halving's already priced in. Other people are saying it's not priced in. I think this next year or two will really kind of define, potentially what happens for the next 5 to 10 years in the, crypto space. There's been a lot of speculation that, the reason Bitcoin is not higher than, it is right now is because of so many Ponzi schemes like, OneCoin and Plus Token, which basically collected hundreds of thousands of Bitcoin and then have been, liquidating them on the open market, which has been suppressing the price. Another thing, too, that people have always speculated as a form of price suppression on Bitcoin is Bitcoin futures as well. If you remember to December 17th or 18th in 2017, right when the Bitcoin futures came online from CBOE and CME, that's when the price just, dropped massively. So yeah, we'll see what happens. I'm very bullish in the long term. It's so hard to make, you know, short term predictions. I saw, you know, on your last episode, CZ was saying the same thing. Like, it's impossible to make short term predictions. You can use technical analysis to, you know, maybe have some degree of, you know, figuring out what the price is going to do. But really, you know, the bet that we all have is that this is multi-decade level of, you know, technology that'll be, you know, really kind of get us to a place where Bitcoin does potentially become like a, you know, global currency.
Yeah. I know a lot of people, they're in it for the short term. A lot of those people have been squeezed out, but there's still quite a few that are here that are hoping that Bitcoin is just going to, you know, crazy surge over the next, you know, day, hour, yeah. You know, or the next year. I mean, you got McAfee saying he's going to eat his own hot dog, you know, with, if it doesn't hit, you know, $1 million in 2020. And I've always said, do you want mustard or ketchup with that? Because bucks, you know, like that seems like a lot, but especially in such a short period of time. So a lot of people are definitely hoping that the price of Bitcoin goes up a lot sooner. And, you know, the thing is it's such a small market cap, right? I mean, it's so small. When you look at the size of crypto, I mean, it's like 25% of the size of like Apple. You know what I mean? The entire cryptocurrency market is like a quarter of the size of just one company in fintech outside of crypto. It's super small. It's very, very small. So a lot of stuff can happen. But I think we both agree that over the long term, you know, that it's got nowhere to go but up. I think there's, like anything, there's going to be things that go down. I think 99% of the cryptos we see will probably be dead in the course of the next year or two. They're going to run out of money. All kinds of things are going to happen. They won't be able to keep up with tech from outside big companies that come into crypto that, you know, have a better solution than what they've been working on for 3 years or 8 years or whatever. And so I think a lot of stuff has yet to be seen, and it's going to be pretty incredible over the next, you know, few years as to what actually, you know, transpires. So, but one thing I definitely do know that is always going to be needed is media. And so what you're doing, man, is always going to be needed and appreciated and of value, because people are always going to know what's going on. And so it's pretty awesome that, you know, the stuff that you bring is different from, you know, some of the other companies out there. Some of the people that are just covering regurgitated news, you guys are out there digging deep, bringing stuff to the people, you know, diving deep behind the people in these projects, talking about the projects, having a little sidebar there with all the different information for the projects and the CEOs. And that stuff's the value, man. That stuff's really cool, man. So kudos. I appreciate it. And we'll make sure that we add a link to that. But enough about your business, man. Let's talk more about you. So, you know, besides, you know, building, you know, a big media empire, what do you do for fun, man? What kind of skills, talents, any of that kind of stuff you get?
Man, that's kind of hard to say, because I've devoted my life and existence to crypto over the past, you know, really past 4.5 years with CryptoSlate. It just turned 2 years old. So kind of every waking moment has been devoted to you know, either programming on the site, building new pages for the site, coming up with new features, kind of curating the news, doing sales, business development. I'm kind of, you know, like a weird guy in the sense that I can wear so many different hats in the business. Like I, you know, I program and, you know, kind of manage the writers and do sales. So I really haven't had too much free time to do, you know, a lot of fun stuff. But, you know, the things that I do like to do, I love to travel. I love to, you know, see the world and experience different cultures. And that, you know, is another benefit of crypto and blockchain. Over the past few years, I was in Malta speaking at, you know, conferences, and in Gibraltar, and obviously London and Spain. So I'm just thankful that, you know, this is such a global phenomenon that it's given me the opportunity to really travel all around the world and, you know, meet different groups, see how different jurisdictions operate, network, you know, all over the place. So that's absolutely cool.
It's awesome, man. Where's been your favorite place to visit and travel to so far?
I thought Malta was a really cool place. I was in Malta last year for the Malta Blockchain Summit, and Malta, you know, Blockchain Island was kind of their moniker. And it was funny too, is the Prime Minister just resigned, I believe. So there was basically this kind of major kind of scandal at the top where this journalist got murdered, gunned down in the streets, and then you know, some of the people, kind of high profile Malta business people, were implicated to some capacity. So it's weird to see that happening.
A car bomb?
No, I think she was just gunned down. Like, she was actually killed. Yeah, she was. Yeah, so that's.
I was just there like maybe a few months ago or something, and there was a big political scandal there that there was somebody in the media that was going to expose some people higher up. And they got blown up in a car. So.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Yeah, the world's a dangerous place. You know, and it really remains to be seen if Malta will continue to be blockchain island as it's, you know, as it's tried to be. Like, a lot of crypto exchanges have set up offices there, like Binance and OKX. OKX recently, I believe in November of this year, they opened their office. But, you know, there are other places, obviously, like Singapore, which is also a blockchain hub. A lot of companies are moving there. Actually, I know a lot of companies in Seattle that have talked about, you know, it's so difficult to operate in the United States that they're considering moving to Singapore as well, or somewhere like London. So it's weird how the United States kind of, because it has been so slow to pass kind of clear legislation or dictate what is the right way to go about doing something, is losing out on a lot of the innovation that, you know, it kind of capitalized on 20 years ago during the last tech revolution.
Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, America's always been known for innovation, for breeding entrepreneurs, for bringing some of the coolest stuff to the world. And so it's going to be interesting to see, you know, how soon they adopt blockchain and start making it easier for people to use it and to build it versus what's currently going on. So you got that right. But, you know, some of the stuff in Malta, man, when I was just there, it was pretty incredible. I mean, as far as it looked like there was parts of it that kind of looked like Rome and Washington, D.C., with kind of like this, I don't know, maybe like Egyptian type, you know, I would guess maybe like the stones. You know, it kind of had like this tan color. It kind of had like this tan color, but it looked like Rome and D.C. just had a baby or something like that. And it just had a lot of really cool culture and all kinds of crazy mythology that's happened there. And it was a really interesting place.
Yeah, it's one of the oldest kind of modern cultures too. Like, I think they've traced, like, Malta has you know, some like architecture or historical you know, significance going back 5,000 years. So, you know, it's an incredible place. It really does have like a unique mix of kind of British and Italian culture and Middle Eastern culture, and you know, being in the middle of the ocean, just being an island, it definitely has developed its own personality.
Yeah, it's pretty muddy there for sure. It was a great place to visit. So what about you personally again, man? So you got, what's your favorite movie and favorite book? Something that people have to see that you've seen, that read, that, you know, you just love and you think other people would as well.
Favorite movie, I would probably say Gladiator, you know, with Russell Crowe.
Yep.
Yeah. That's a classic. You know, it's funny. I don't read too many books. I read a lot of news. I'm addicted to data in the sense that I have real-time analytics on one of my screens. I have three screens. On one of them, I have real-time analytics all day. So I'm always looking at, and this is web traffic, so I'm always trying to figure out, you know, what particular articles we wrote are getting hit, you know, where is it coming from. I'm trying to just gain an edge on the data side. I've always felt like the more data one has to analyze, you know, quantitatively and qualitatively, that can kind of go on an edge to figure out, you know, what is the, you know, what's resonating with our readers, basically. So, but on the book side, I haven't read as nearly as much as I would like to.
Gotcha. Yeah. You see, knowledge is power, right? Or I guess information in your case, yeah. Power and applied information or applied knowledge, you know, would be even more powerful. So pretty awesome stuff. Absolutely. And then, yeah, I guess, last question for you, man. We've been going like 30 minutes or something like that. I know it's late. So, if you had a time machine, this is something I always ask people. And you can only go forward or back, but you had to stay there. So time machine, you can go forward, back, as far as you want, whatever. No limits. Only limit is you have to stay there. So when would you go to and why or where?
I'd probably go to October 31st, 2008. You know the significance of that date.
Yes, I do. So,
yeah. So that's when the Bitcoin white paper came out. So I would go back then, I'd read the white paper, and I would just get involved with the same level of interest that I have right now in the Bitcoin community. I would chat with Satoshi if I could on the Bitcoin Talk forums, or send him an email and, you know, ask him questions and maybe try to provide some sort of, you know, additional insight into, you know, who this guy actually is, what he thinks.
Yeah.
So one of the funny things, you know, he said on some Bitcoin talk post at one point was that his favorite pizza has jalapenos and pineapple on it. And everyone thought that was, you know, a unique thing that, you know, people could gain to figure out who this guy is.
Yeah, good old Nick Szabo. That's who I think it is. But I mean, who else would publish an article or whatnot talking about all the cool stuff that they're doing that predated Bitcoin? And then after Bitcoin launched, he had people post it after Bitcoin launched, change the dates of it. I mean, to me, that's when I read that years and years ago, I was like, wow, that's a little fishy. That's a little funny. And why isn't anything about BitGold mentioned in the white paper when everything else is? So I don't know. But, hopefully, you know, hopefully it's not Nick Szabo. But
him or Hal Finney is the other guy that people have speculated a lot, which Hal Finney, you know, died and his head is actually frozen at Alcor in, you know, it's a cryogenic facility in Scottsdale, Arizona. So, you know, he hopes,
Disney.
he hopes one day, maybe, you know, by the time the last Bitcoin is mined, that we'll have the technology to revive people.
Yep. Awesome, man. Cool. Well, I know you got a busy night. I look forward to catching up with you there at Istanbul, there at the Blockchain Week. What's it called? Istanblock?
Yeah, Istanbul 2020. And prior to that, that's the main event, but Istanbul Blockchain Week will be April 5th, I believe, through the 10th. Yeah. So that's an event everyone should check out. CryptoSlate will be one of the main media partners. If you go on CryptoSlate right now, you can learn more about it or go on IstanbulBlockchainWeek.com. But yeah, that really will be the event to go to in 2020.
Can't wait, man. Can't wait to see you there. So unless I see you in Seattle first, I'll see you in Turkey, because Turkey is delicious, peeps. So we'll see
Likewise.
You.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Later, bro. God bless. Hey, welcome back, everybody, and a huge thanks to Nate. It is always great to just, you know, kick back and chat with you a little bit and just talk about the things that are going on in the market and things that are going on in the world. Awesome times. Looking forward to seeing you in Istanbul. Just a friendly reminder, Crypto Beetle shows are never financial advice, recommendations, or trading strategies. The views expressed here are solely that of Robert Beetles and his guests. Robert Beetles is the co-founder of the Monarch Wallet, host of Trading View Sessions, Crypto Beetles on YouTube, and on several entities. Robert's opinions here do not reflect that of those entities. Some information shared here may not actually be factual. These shows are for information and entertainment purposes only. Never invest a single Satoshi or penny in anything without first seeking the counsel and advice of a professional financial advisor. Robert Beetles is not a financial expert or advisor. Investing in anything is super dangerous. You can lose all of your money, so always trade at your own risk. Please help us grow the family. Give us a comment and review on the Apple or Google Play Store. It's super quick and easy. Just scroll down, click the little stars, comment, and just help us grow the fam. All right. God bless you. Love you. Till the next one. Talk to you soon.